I'm your host, Juliet, and I'm here with my co-host, Teresa.
Hi.
And you're listening to Mind the Gap. Mind the Gap is a podcast dedicated to discovering the minds behind health, rehabilitation, and neuroscience researchers. So sit back, relax, and please, mind the gap. Today we are here with an extremely valuable member in the LBRF lab, Janet.
Hi everybody, Janet here.
Janet, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, okay. Janet McDonald, and I grew up in Pictou County in Nova Scotia, went to Dalhousie, Bachelor of Arts degree. I am married, I have a 17-year-old son, and I'm a very big fan now of Wrexham AFC.
Oh.
Any Wrexham fans out there? North Whalian Football Club.
Okay. I was like, I did not know.
Yeah, I was going to say,
For some reason, I pictured like monster trucks. I don't know why.
No, it's the club that Ryan Reynolds and Ron McElhenney bought.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, big fan.
Okay. Okay, so Janet, we have started a new segment. You might not have heard of it yet because it hasn't come out on any of our recent podcast episodes. But previously we had rapid fire questions, and now we have first date questions.
Oh boy.
So it's just to get to know you a little bit better. So I'll start off with the first date question, which is, what job did you want as a kid?
Oh, that's an easy one. Excuse me. I wanted to be a guidance counselor at a high school.
Okay. How did you come across, like, wanting that as a job?
I'm not completely sure. It wasn't that I wanted to teach necessarily, although I have done that and I like to do that. But I think it was the giving advice to people, maybe. Mm. I like to help people and give advice and do what I could to help guide them in a good direction.
Yeah. Teresa, do you know what you wanted to be as a kid?
Oh my gosh. It changed. So I remember when I was really young, I wanted to be a marine biologist. But then my uncle was like, you don't want to be a marine biologist. The only men you're going to meet are all geeks. And I was like, oh gosh, okay, I don't want to be a marine biologist.
Yeah, your opinions can be shifted quickly. Yeah. As a kid.
I was like 8 years old and I was like, okay, what you say is a fact.
Yes, yeah. When I was a kid, for a number of years, I wanted to be famous.
No.
I don't even think it was a job, like just famous. Now, though, I definitely do not want to be famous. But when I was a kid, I don't even know what kind of fame I wanted. I think maybe like I wanted to be a singer or something, but I'm glad that didn't turn out.
Do you sing, Juliet?
Like, not seriously at all, but I can strum some chords on a ukulele. And I can be really annoying about it. So, yeah, it's a fun time.
So our second first date question for you, Janet, is if you could have any superpower, what would it be and why?
Maybe fly?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good thing to be able to do. Not just to get from one point to the other quickly, but just to be able to see things from a different perspective.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That would be nice, yeah.
Yeah. Teresa, do you ever have, like, a prepared answer for this one?
No, I don't. Although, I would say, I think mine's between flying and teleporting.
Yeah.
So it's very similar. Yeah. Like, I'd like to be able to be like, I want to be back home in Mississauga and just be there.
Yeah.
Or yeah. Back in time.
Yes. Yeah. That would be cool, too. Yeah.
As long as you could get back to
your Yeah. That's what freaks me out a little, like time traveling. I'm just like, I don't know. I don't want to get stuck.
Yeah. That kind of reminds me. I think I've been asked before, like, if you could go back in time and be around for any historical event, like, what would it be? I think you get, like, an option of like three historical events, And, like, all of my answers were, like, I would like to go to a Queen concert.
David Bowie concert. Yeah.
Basically all the concerts I couldn't go to now would be my answer, which I don't know if any of those are actually historical events.
They are to you.
Yeah. Yeah. My brother's answer to the superpower question is my favorite because he goes for a strategy answer, which is he doesn't want a superpower that would be make him like noticeable and like draw a lot of attention to him, as in like the FBI is searching him down or something. Instead, he wants a superpower that would make him really cool at parties. So the one that he came up with, and Teresa, I think I gave you a sneak peek of this last time we went out, is he wants to be a human stud finder.
Oh, yes.
And so basically the idea behind that is like he can just put his hand and hover it across any walls and find a stud with his hand. So very not useful superpower at all, but can impress somebody at a party.
And he could totally fake that.
Yeah.
He could just totally. He's gonna... like, you know, yeah. Yeah. You're going to take apart the wall to find out? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's true. So anyways, I don't even know how he comes up with that. But then, it, you know, then you get termed the human stud finder, which is, like, pretty cool, too. So
I think my other superpower, because I actually – my boyfriend asked me this question the other day, and my answer was that I want to be able to say my dog's name and he just appear. So, like, if I'm, like, Kopi, then he'll appear, and then I can, like – have it stack, and when I'm walking home from the lab, I could have him and walk him home with me.
Or if you just need a little, you know,
little TLC. Like if someone in the lab's having a bad day, I could say Kopi, and they could have Kopi for 5 minutes, and I could be like, but goodbye, and he's back home.
Instant therapy dog.
I think that'd be very helpful.
That would be cool. I would do the same thing, but instead of like an instantaneous dog appearing, just like maybe like treats, and then I'd go around and I'd be like, would you like a brownie? would you like a cookie? Instant way to make friends on university campuses is just to have food to share with other people.
That's true.
I don't actually think I would want that though. Then I'd become too popular and I would be too famous. Anyways, just kidding. All right, so that's it for our first eight questions. So, Janet, we are wondering, how did you become Sean's administration assistant?
Well, I inherited Sean. So my role isn't actually attached to Sean. It's attached to the position that Sean is in.
Okay.
The Associate Dean of Research in the Faculty of Health. So whoever has that job... I am their admin assistant.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you were there prior.
I was there before Sean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I inherited him, and I thank my lucky stars every day that I did because he's fabulous to work for. Yeah.
Yeah. I also like working for him.
Or sometimes he says he feels like he's working for us.
Yeah. He always likes to mention that without us, he wouldn't be there. So he is working for me, right?
And
what is your role as, like, I know you're Sean's administrator, or you're the, sorry, the dean. I've already forgotten the name of the role.
I'm the administrative assistant to the Associate Dean of Research in the Faculty of Health.
Okay.
The Associate Dean is a 5-year term, and Sean is in that role.
No. Okay. And what is your role? What kind of things do you get up to as the admin assistant?
It can vary, and sometimes it's kind of projects that I do here and there for them, Sean and Carly, his the other person who works with him in research and Faculty of Health. And so I'll do different types of, you know, kind of project-based stuff for them and with them. And, you know, the lab website, making sure that's up to date as much as possible and that sort of stuff. But the main thing I do is I manage Sean's calendar.
Yes.
And so he wears many different hats. He has different roles other than just, you know, associate dean. So all of his calendar is basically color coded and all this stuff. And so if you've ever seen a really heavily decorated Christmas tree with all the colors and the lights flashing and all that sort of stuff, that's basically what his calendar looks like. And just making sure he's where he needs to be. When he needs to be there.
He's definitely a busy guy, and I always I feel like I sometimes have a selfish lens on my calendar. And then Sean's like, oh, yeah, we're not meeting this week, right? And I'm like, no, we have a meeting tomorrow. How could you have possibly forgotten? And he's like, no.
Don't take personal
There's
offense.
No reality in which he actually knows everything before he like looks at it. He's like, oh, this is coming up in 30 minutes. Yeah.
But you know what? He's incredibly organized. Like despite that sort of stuff, like despite whatever he has on it, you know, all the things that he has on his plate, he's really well organized. And whenever you are meeting with him, you have his full attention.
Yes,
which
for
is
sure.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Which is very impressive, to be honest.
Yeah. I find it helpful, too, that his office is within our lab, which he probably doesn't love all the time because we'll be like, Sean, do you have a minute? And he's like, is it actually a minute or are we going to be here for 5 minutes? Because I have to go to another meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he does always make the time.
Yeah, yeah. And on other occasions where we're like all, I think everyone in our lab is exceptionally loud.
Yes. So
it's quite impressive when he can get work done with us literally right outside of his office.
Well, he has two kids at home, so I think that he's probably conditioned.
True.
I feel like
the
that
dogs.
Would teach you.
Yeah. And the three dogs.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Really surprised to find out that he has three dogs. And not just any three dogs, but like,
he has
variety. like big variety. Yeah. But the funniest photo he showed me was like his poodle, but that like poodle mix dog that was standing with his legs out and then the rest of his body was on a couch.
Oh.
Like, what is going on in this? But yeah.
So Janet, you mentioned that you did some teaching before.
Yeah, I taught English. I taught English in Portugal for a little over a year. Oh. And then I taught a bit here as well at an English second language school.
Language.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. And that was prior to getting into admin or?
Yeah, that was kind of in between. Most of my professional work has been done in higher education and mostly at Dell, but I had a few detours and that was one of my detours to go to Portugal.
I love Portugal.
Teach over there. Yeah, it was amazing. And, you know, I had a few other detours as well. I lived in Vancouver and I was admissions officer at UBC in Vancouver.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. From coast to coast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Europe, yeah.
Okay, nice. Yeah, it's still on my bucket list to teach English in Taiwan. Because my mom's from Taiwan, and so I really want to spend, like, at least a year there or something like that. And I really like teaching, and so given that I don't speak any Chinese, it's one of the few positions I think I could get in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. So, but I think it would be – did you enjoy teaching English?
I did. I loved it. I had different – classes. So I taught in some schools in Portugal, just outside of Lisbon. And I had, it was less academic and more conversation. And I had a really great adult class. People who were just taking it basically to improve their English, either for enjoyment or maybe there might have been a bit of a professional side to it. But I had like a person who was a professional artist who did beautiful artwork, like, you know, semi-famous, I guess you would say, in Portugal. And another person who was part of the symphony orchestra.
Wow.
A Czechoslovakian person who was there for the symphony in Lisbon and just taking English courses. So you just meet
so many
great
different people.
And it's a lot of fun sharing stuff and then learning from them about our language, things that you've never thought about before. It's like, oh, I never thought of it that way before. You're right. It is that. And like one of our classes, just for fun and just to kind of get people, you know, engaged, this wasn't planned. It just kind of came up one time. It was like, they were interested about the different names of bathrooms. Like, what is the different English names for bathrooms. So we actually went off on a tangent and just listed, I think we came up with like 20 different names.
Oh my gosh.
You know, for bathroom, wash closet, and all of the different things. And, you know, just fun
stuff
like that.
You never would even think about that. Yeah.
Wasn't part of my lesson plan, but no. Yeah, just interesting tidbits. And you get to learn about different people's culture that way as well. Just
definitely.
In a fun way.
Yeah.
What were some of the cultural differences you noticed between like Portugal and Canada?
A couple of things that I found. Their attitude and the way that they feel about food is much different than the way that we think about it. Now, I was there probably 20 years ago, so I mean, it's gotten a little bit more Americanized, you know, during that time. But they have, in my opinion, a very healthy kind of relationship with food, and it's kind of, you know, highly valued in terms of the way that they gather around food, and that it's not a rushed kind of like that, you know, there was no real takeout in terms of, you know, drive-throughs and that sort of stuff. It's more of a gathering time and a place to share a conversation over this gathering, so it's much more respected. They respect it in a different way.
Not just sitting in front of a TV and eating.
Or going through a drive-thru and scarfing and that down, you know, which I've done before. Yes. So I'm not trying to be preachy here, but it was just a very different way of doing things. The other thing is that many people where I lived and in the bigger centers in Europe live in apartments.
Yes.
Yeah. They grow up, they have children in apartments, like that's their life. They don't have, you know, houses with yards and all of that sort of stuff. So they are out a lot more because they're not kind of in these big, large homes and everything. So they will, you know, go out to eat. They will walk a lot. They will be in parks a lot. So in some ways, they get a lot more outdoor time, I think. They do like a nightly stroll after eating and things like that. So it was very different. It's very different from North America in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice to be able to appreciate different cultures and kind of like learn from them too, and be like, well, how do I want to live my life and adjust even when you come back to Canada? Mm-hmm. Did you travel much when you went to Portugal, like around Portugal?
Only in Portugal. And you know what? It's funny because it's a very small country, but it is so culturally varied that honestly, I didn't need to see anything more because there was so much there to see. Plus, I wasn't a tourist. I was living there. Yes. You know, I had two jobs actually, teaching and at an international women's club. So, you know, it was the everyday life for me, which was kind of a different kind of experience than being a tourist. So I had to, like, you know, do all of the day-to-day stuff and the banking and all figuring stuff out and the groceries and that. Yeah. Driving over there and all that sort of stuff. But it was an incredible experience. If anybody is thinking about doing a year abroad, I definitely suggest that they do. You get an appreciation for other people, other cultures, and then you see things differently. You have a different perspective when you come back to North America, good and bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you went to Peniche when you were in Portugal.
No, Peniche.
I love it. It reminded me so much of Halifax. I felt so at home.
Where is that?
It's so if like Lisbon is down here. I'm not good with geography. Right. It's a peninsula and it's up west.
Oh, okay. Northwest. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like past Cascais. Oh, Cascais.
That's basically where I lived was Cascais.
Yeah, it's like past there, probably maybe like 2 hour.
Oh, yeah, okay. I probably did see that.
Yeah, it was and beautiful. And
Cabo de Roca is right there, and that's the most western point in Europe.
Oh.
And it looks very much like Newfoundland.
Okay.
Like if you've been to Cape Spear, it's basically Cape Spear in Portugal.
Yeah, because Peniche was literally Halifax. It's where the super surfing is.
Oh, yeah.
What it's called.
Yeah. The Nazaire.
That's where super, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
But
yeah, I don't know very much about Portugal, but I think there a town or a city called Faro there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, in the Algarve in the south.
Yeah. My friend was studying, she's doing like this big international marine master's program, and she studied in Faro.
Right.
So I know the name Faro. So kind of going back to how you handle Sean's schedule, we wanted to ask you point blank, how busy is he actually?
Well, remember that Christmas tree I referred to earlier? Yeah. He's back to back. In fact, I put in breaks for him.
Mm.
Because if I didn't put in breaks, I don't know that he would stop, to tell you the truth. So I will actually schedule in, just short breaks for him. Yeah, because he won't do it for himself, so I do it.
Yeah, that's really smart. I feel like burnout is so prevalent, and so having those breaks is like so needed. So it's good that you do that.
And now, because a lot of meetings are online, they are literally back to back. Like it used to be that, you know, they would be in different places, mm-hmm. so you could walk between and just get a little bit of exercise, maybe could pick up a coffee, say hello to somebody. But that's not happening hardly at all anymore. And yeah, so it can make for, you know, a very tight schedule. So anyway.
Yeah, as much as I think online meetings have done, like, you know, a very good job during COVID, I definitely am pro meet in person.
Mm-hmm. And I know Sean tries to do that whenever possible. He especially with students, he wants to, you know, be there with you. And
So we were wondering, what would you say is the hardest part of your job, and then what's the most rewarding part of your job?
Mm. Hardest part of my job, probably, I don't really have one, to tell you the truth. Honestly, I'm not joking. Yeah. I like my job, and I don't find any of it difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not just copping out there. I really enjoy most aspects of it, and it's fine. As far as most rewarding, you know, it sounds a bit silly to say it, but everybody in, you know, with Dell Health and research in particular, everybody who does that has a role to play.
Yeah.
And even though I play a very, very, very small role in that, I feel good. Like, it's important for me that I have work that where I'm feel like I'm making some kind of contribution towards a bigger thing. And even though it's a very small part of it, you know, kind of facilitating Sean to be able to do his job well and everything, to me, that is, you know, rewarding. I don't think I could do a job if I didn't have some kind of contribution
behind it. Yep. That makes sense to me when you mentioned that you wanted to be a guidance counselor, because it's helping in different ways, like giving guidance to students versus like guiding Sean's schedule.
Yeah.
It's like kind of contributing in similar ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. And given how busy he is, I don't really know how, like, one person would be able to handle all of that on their own. So it's definitely like a very important role to have.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, the lab website is the reason I joined the labs. Good.
That's good to know.
Yeah,
Sean has you to thank.
Yeah, I really do like the lab website. There are some impressively bad websites out there. Like, not to throw them under the bus, but University of Ottawa, my goodness. I could not for the life of me find any of the grad programs they offered. They had this really weird, like, circle graphic situation on where you just like kept clicking different things and I couldn't get anywhere. But yeah, Sean's website was like so easy to navigate, so that was helpful. And I find that most university websites have their kinks, and Dal's is definitely click on a link and it brings you to an error for page. It's like every link possible does that, but not Sean's website. So my next question for you is, I'm assuming you have impressive time management skills, given that you do a lot of like organizing based work, but we'll get to this in a second, but you also have other work that you do in addition to this. So what advice do you have for others looking to like improve their time management, or advice for schedule planning or setting up a calendar for themselves, stuff like that?
Yeah, one of the things that I do with my time that I think is really important is time blocking. So instead of, you know, being reactive to your schedule, to be proactive and actually put in blocks of time based on your big goals. So what's the big thing that I want to make sure that I'm accomplishing? Most of us have at least one thing, you know, that we either need to do or want to do. and actually making time. So don't wait for free time, because free time doesn't exist for anybody anymore. You have to make time for the things that really matter to you and the big goals that you have. So actually blocking out time in your schedule to work on those things proactively, and setting that up over a period of time. I think that alone can help a lot of people to be more successful in reaching their goals.
Yeah. I remember when I was doing my undergrad, the most stressful part of my undergrad was the first 2 weeks of school, where I was like putting together my schedule, because like I like to like really plan everything out before everything starts to get busy, and just like figuring out when all the assignments were due, when all the tests were, and you know, being proactive about things was really helpful. But I guess, I don't know if you have good advice for this, but like, how do you overcome being reactive like, you know, you get to a point where you're like, I'm behind, you know? Is it like, just, I guess, schedule things until you eventually catch up kind of thing? I don't know. I don't know if there's a simple answer question.
There are always going to be things that pop up, you know, that you either missed, or, you know, maybe, you know, life things kind of pop up or whatever. I think you need to cut yourself a little slack in those situations. I mean, you can only plan so much, right? Mm-hmm. But you can think about it. Well, the best time to do this would have been in advance, but the next best time is now.
Oh, yeah. That's good advice.
And just kind of do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good segue into our next question for you. Sean has mentioned that you're part-time to us. So what do you do with the rest of your time? We know you have a business of your own, I believe.
Yeah. So I operate a business called My Campus GPS Education Consulting. So I help high school students and their families all across Canada with how to find scholarships and how to make their best applications for scholarships and how to prepare for scholarships. So I work with high school students who are on the university path, who will be applying for competitive programs and probably writing personal statements for admission and for scholarships as well. So I help them to understand what's the best way that I can prepare in my activities, in my academics, in my activities. How should I prepare if I'm going for these more competitive programs and scholarships? And then I help them to actually highlight the information, the strategy around the application, how to highlight their best information, how to present it in the best way. The student always writes the application.
That's important.
Okay. I'm not writing applications for people. What I'm doing is helping them to understand the strategy behind that particular application. What are they looking for? What do I need to highlight? What information, what activities do I have? How do I highlight those in the best way? And how do I put that all together in this package?
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I feel like I've heard, maybe I just really don't know much about the field, but I feel like I've heard a lot of kind of like admission coaches and stuff in the U.S., but not so much in Canada. Do you find it's like an undersaturated field? Or?
Well, it's becoming more so, but you're right. Even 5 years ago, there were probably not many people who were doing this. I was probably one of, you know, just a few, but there are definitely more people who are doing it now and more companies. There are a couple of, you know, kind of
larger
companies who are doing this now. But yes, it's been a very common occupation in the U.S. for many years.
Time,
there's nothing unusual about hiring someone to help your child with getting admission into university.
And I have so many questions. Firstly, how long have you been working? Or, like, how long have you been doing this role?
I started the business probably 8 years ago, something like that.
Okay. And then are you associated with any specific high school, or could really, like, any high school student reach out to you?
Yeah, no, I'm just hired by the family.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and so do you work across Canada, like work with families across Canada then?
Yeah, so most of the students I work with are in Ontario, mainly the Toronto area, but some in BC and some in Nova Scotia here. So, you know, anybody though in Canada can hire me. I work one-to-one with students and families if, mm-hmm. if the parents want to be involved. That's yeah. fine with me. It's students and parents. One-to-one, I do scholarship essay writing workshops. Mm. And I do a grade 10 and 11 like prep boot camp.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, these are group programs, but I do work one-to-one with students as well to discuss their specific situation, what universities are you applying for, you know, and to put their packages together.
That must be a very rewarding job.
It is. It really is. It's like yeah. I'm starting, actually right now, it's the grade 12s that I worked with in the fall. They're starting to get their responses yes. now. And
it must feel so good yeah. when they're like, we got in.
Yeah. Like I got one the other day that a student got into probably the most difficult program in Canada to get into. And he was like, thank you so much. It's a dream come true. Oh. And honestly, that just makes my week. Yeah. I say, and I'm not joking, I do like a dance in my office.
I can imagine. Because,
yeah, I'm just so happy for them. Because not only, it's not just about getting into the thing. It's that these kids are great kids.
Mm-hmm.
They're really great kids who worked really hard. And, I mean, it's not always a good news story, but, you know, and when it's not, then, you know, I try to let them know that it's not yeah. it's not always the that it's not the end of the world. But yeah, to play a small part in, you know, having them reach that success, that goal, then that's an amazing feeling.
Mm-hmm. And do they ever reach out to you to, like, do you know where any of them are now? Because if you've been doing this for about 8 years, do you ever get to follow their stories too?
I do with a few students, yeah. And mm-hmm. I know, especially the more recent ones, like, I'll kind of know where they went, like, so-and-so's at McGill or so-and-so's mm-hmm. here or whatever, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And a couple of people I kind of have kept in contact and yeah. I mm-hmm. kind of know where they are, but
yeah. Another question that I had is, how do people find out about your role? Is it like they mostly yeah I guess what are some different ways that they might come across this?
Yeah, so I spend a lot of time on organic marketing.
Okay.
So it's I don't do paid advertising. It's all organic. So I do a lot of blog posts. I write for scholarshipscanada.com and people find me there. I do a lot of posts on Twitter and LinkedIn and some on Facebook. You know, and having been putting out content for a long time,
mm-hmm.
people get to know me, and then there's referrals and all of that sort of stuff. But it takes a long time when you do it the way that I'm doing it. But a lot of that is like I say, blog posts with content that teaches people about certain things. One of my most popular blogs is called Yes, Grade 11 Marks Matter, because one of the biggest questions I get is, do grade 11 marks matter? Yes. Grade 11 marks matter. Okay. So they find me maybe through a Google search and then come across that or whatever. I do presentations in schools as well, or online with schools who hire me. So I've paid presentations that I do with some schools. So lots of different ways, but none of it is paid advertising.
Yeah. Yeah. And I imagine a lot of referrals, word of mouth from students that found success and really enjoyed the experience.
Yeah, those are the best ones.
Yeah.
I would have, I think, really enjoyed knowing about it when I was in high school. I knew surprisingly little about university when I applied for it. Like, really, really disconnect from it for some reason. I think my brothers, I had two older brothers, so I knew that after high school people can go to university, seeing that they did it, but I don't even know if I filled out any scholarship applications.
That's the case with most people, to tell you the truth. Yeah. There's not. I mean, the students who I work with, especially one-to-one, these are highly motivated, highly ambitious students who are normally on the path for competitive programs in some of the biggest scholarships in Canada. I mean, you know, they're $100,000, $120,000, these scholarships. So there's students who have put thought into the process, yes, and who have been planning
probably since this, like, grade, mm-hmm, 9.
Yeah.
I think when I was, and I still do it sometimes too now, but it's like when I was in high school, I was just like doing it day by day. Like, all right, done grade, yeah, 10, going into grade 11. And I remember, like, in grade 10, like, I don't even think I ever wrote down, like, the dates of tests. Mm-mm. Like, I would just show up, and then it's like, oh, there's a test today. Cool. Like, and I just read. I that was not true for grade 11 and grade 12. I definitely figured out that you had to write some things down. But then near the end of grade 12, it's like people are asking you, like, what are you going to do? And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, what comes after this? I was surprisingly naive to everything.
But, you know, I think that there is some value in that. I think that it, you know, taken to an extreme,
yeah,
it's not healthy, mm-hmm, to have that level of competition that sometimes students get very attached,
yes,
to the
their
goal.
Whole like self-worth is, yeah, based off of just,
yeah,
grades,
exactly,
or, yeah,
so maybe somewhere between where you were, Juliet, a nice balance there, yeah, like a nice healthy balance.
Yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate for a lot of reasons. Like, my parents put a lot of effort into making sure I did a lot of things,
yeah,
extracurricular. Like, it wasn't a challenge, I would say, to apply to university. However, I only did end up applying to one university. And, like, a lot of the reason behind going to UVic was just because, like, oh yeah, I've been to Victoria before, and, like, wouldn't recommend. I think people are a lot better at planning these days than I was in high school. But then it worked out really well for me. I feel like I'm, like, a true academic at heart. Like, I love school. And I've loved school ever since grade 10, 11, and 12. I think I just didn't really understand the connection between being done grade 12 and becoming a doctor, which is what I wanted to do. I, like, the in-between made no sense to me. I was like, how does this?
You're like, I don't show up to the hospital?
Yeah. I don't just become a doctor now. And, yeah, maybe I should have taken my... I know, like, in high school, you have to take those, like, career life planning courses and stuff. I might have rushed through some of those sections or something like that. But, yeah, that's... it's really cool work that you do. I think... past Juliet would have really would have benefited a lot from it.
Yeah, I think a lot of students would, even if it's not exactly what I'm doing. But the problem is, you know, guidance counselors these days in high school might have, like, my son is in a high school with 1,500 students and they have 3 guidance counselors.
Wow.
So, I mean, 500, yeah, kids, you know, it's impossible for them to do all of that. And they've got a lot of different, more urgent matters usually, mm-hmm, at,
yes,
hand. So there isn't a lot in high school, and that's part of the reason why people turn to people like me, mm-hmm, to help to guide them through the process. Because it is confusing. There's a lot,
yeah,
going on.
Mm-hmm.
Grade 12 is busy. It's stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like, I think another reason why I never really had any particular, like, strong pull in one direction or the other in grades 10, 11, and 12 is because I, like, really enjoyed every subject, mm-hmm, when I was a kid. I think the only subject that I did particularly poorly in was social studies. And so I think, like, the idea of, like, choosing a path was really difficult for me because my two brothers, they're, like, one was just extremely, extremely, extremely good at math, and that's what he ended up going into. And the other one learned how to build a reverse card tower when he was, like, 10, so we knew he was going to be an engineer before he even knew it. Like, a reverse card tower, it's actually insane. And meanwhile, I'm just, like doing just consistent, like, across all courses. I didn't have any particular strengths or weaknesses, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you give any guidance on, I'm assuming the student has to come to a decision on their own of, like, what they choose to go down, but how to make that choice?
Yeah, so I definitely do if that's the kind of help that they're looking for. I mean, I mainly focus on scholarships and, and some on that admission side, but definitely it's all rolled up into one, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I just had a meeting this morning with a student, and that's basically what they wanted to cover was, you know, how do I know what's out there? How do I research, you know, the different options that I have available? Students have a lot of options today. And although that's good, it can be overwhelming too. And so sometimes they get paralyzed because there are so many ways that they can go. So I help them because I've worked in universities for 20 years. I know how they work. And I know one of my first jobs at Dalhousie was I was an assistant registrar of admissions. So I did recruitment and admission and academic advising with prospective students and with current students. So I knew everything basic. I'm not saying I knew everything, but I covered the whole timeline from choosing, like from meeting the kid in the gymnasium, you know, and talking about Dal and the different opportunities and all that sort of stuff, right up through to graduation. Like, here's what you need for graduation. So I have, you know, that kind of broad experience with that stuff. So I can, you know, communicate some of those best ways to research different programs. I can make suggestions for programs. So last night I had a meeting with a student and in Ontario, and they were saying that they might want to come to Dal for marine biology. Great. Have you thought about doing the integrated science program in your first year, and told them about that? And, you know, kind of, and then I'll send them links. Here's how you can find out more information. Here's what you can do. Okay, you think maybe you might be interested in this area. Well, here are the courses that are available, you know.
Yeah.
Have a look through those and just think to yourself, does this look interesting to me? Would I want to take those classes? You know, and sometimes that's a yes. That's a wow. Yes. I can't, like, that looks so cool. I want to take that one, that one, that one. Or if you look at it and you go, that is not at all what I thought it was going to be, then, you know, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, you found that out. Yeah. So I do some of that exploration with them for sure, but I am not a trained career
life coach
guidance.
So I'm not trained. I don't give specific advice on take this course, like well, I probably would. Okay, if you're going into science, you need to take
there's certain ones.
Exactly. So, but I'm not going to say, you know, maybe you should take this over this one or something like that. I might make a suggestion, but you need to check with your guidance office. So I don't make you know, those types of advice and decisions for students.
Yeah, you must learn about, like, all these programs that not a lot of people know exist. Because I feel like when I was applying to university, I, like, looked at the names of everything and I was like, whoa, I don't know. Which one is doctor?
Which one says doctor?
And thankfully, big thanks to the university of most universities in Canada for making all science programs do the same first year so that you can decide what program you're going into after your first year. But yeah, I know that since I started my undergrad, there have been a lot more programs that have just, like, recently become programs. So it must be really cool to hear about all these things.
Well, it is, but again, it can be overwhelming, and that's, you know, I don't want to overwhelm people with that sort of stuff. Normally, they have some kind of idea when they come to me, or an area at least. To start with, but it could be engineering, and there are a lot of different disciplines. There are a lot of different ways that you can go with that. So I always encourage students to do exploration. And the main thing that I suggest that they do are informational interviews with people who are in the type of job. It doesn't have to be the exact job, but in the type of job that you are interested in potentially pursuing. And find out, I have a guide, like a four-page guide with some suggested questions and everything to help them to do these types of interviews. And I think that is one of the best ways to get current information and to get at the real information that is going to be the most helpful to you.
Yeah, the actual, like, what your job will look like after undergrad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you want, is that what you want?
Want your life to be, yeah.
Yeah.
I did a couple of those when I was thinking about going to grad school. I was also thinking about doing, like, a clinical psychology degree. So I talked to some clinical psychologists. I talked to, obviously, Sean and some other researchers. And it gave me a good idea of kind of not only what they do, but what other people who went down the same path can do, because there's just so many different avenues, you never know.
Yeah.
And I found that really helpful.
Yeah, because they can make suggestions too.
Yeah.
Like, you can find out what was your path, and then you one of the questions that you can say, or like to wrap up at the end, is do you have any suggestions for me of other types of avenues that I might be interested in?
Yeah.
And you know, they, depending on who they are and what they're doing and everything, they may also have a lot of insight into what is coming up.
Yes.
What is going to be really a new thing that might be really interesting to you, that you can kind of get in on the ground floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One thing that I was told over and over again when I was in high school is, like, you might think that you want to be this, but let me tell you, you're going to change your mind a million times. And I think it's still good advice, because I did change my mind a million times. But if I were to rephrase that piece of advice now, I think for myself, it would be have an idea, like a goal of what you want to do, but make sure you're open to having that change, kind of. It's like saying the same thing but different.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of how I feel about doing grad school. It's like, ultimately right now, end goal, would love to be a professor, principal investigator, would be so cool. However, if something comes along the way and I shift paths, it's like, it's not necessarily my goal right now, but I am open to it.
Yeah. It's that a person I know wrote a book, and they called it the planned happenstance.
Mm.
It's kind of like you're just open to those things that happen, but you're kind of putting yourself in the right area to be able to have those opportunities.
Yes.
And
And I think part of that is not being afraid to pivot. When I first came to Dal for my undergrad, I was in – Juliet, you actually don't even know this. I was in the Bachelor of Commerce.
Oh.
I thought I wanted to do economics. I wanted to be an economist. My dad was, and I, like, thought what he did was really cool. I got to my classes, and I am such, like, a fact science base. Like, I need the concrete evidence, and I just found it very –
theoretical.
Yeah, very, like, I was like, I can't do this. And then I took intro to neuroscience, and I was like, I love this. So then I decided to minor in it. And then I was like, why don't I just go to a guidance counselor, one of the academic advisors, and see, like, how hard it would be to change. And it was not at all, because I was in my second year, and they're like, you can now have a minor in business and major in neuroscience. And it worked out.
Yeah, I got into my program in my second year, which was semi-intentional, because I did kinesiology, and you couldn't get accepted into the program in your first year. Mm-hmm. And my dad helped me a little bit with my choice of classes, and he knew I really liked one course in high school, which was sports medicine, and he knew what kinesiology was, but to me that word is like, ooh, I have no idea what that means. And my mom, when she was trying to tell her family in Taiwan what I was studying, she couldn't even find the word. Like, it was like, you know, what even is kinesiology? And so shout out to my dad, because I ended up going to the 100 level or the first year level kinesiology courses and loved it. It was just like my sports medicine class, and that's how I ended up applying into it for my second year. But I think, like, I should have just taken general science. I was, like, scared to do that for some reason, and decided, like, I'm going to be in microbiology. However, microbiology doesn't even have classes for microbiology into third or fourth year. So I was basically in general science and switched over.
I think there is a real pressure on students to know early. And even if it's not necessarily coming from the parents or whatever, they internally feel a pressure, like, I need to know. And okay, they should be doing some things to kind of determine, is this the right path or that the right path? But my thing is that I would like students to get more comfortable with not knowing. You know, just get more comfortable with that. That's not to say don't try different things and kind of, you know, do the planning when you need to and all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, if, you know, when you do see something that you want to do, go for it and everything. But this whole thing about that it's wrong if I don't know exactly what it is that I want to do, I'd like to more students to kind of know it's okay not to know and to get comfortable with that. And then that, I think, can allow you to explore a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. I think it's scary advice to accept, just like to...
Especially when you're so young.
Especially when you're young.
Yeah.
Even a lot of my colleagues now who have finished an undergraduate degree and are so... you know, terrified because they don't know what they want to be doing exactly and they don't enjoy being asked what to do. But my best advice that I got was from one of my friends who was studying at Oxford University, doing a PhD there, and was like, you're like a blank slate. Like, yeah, you have a degree, but you're a blank slate. Like, you can really go do whatever you want now. Like, she was talking in the context of a master's. Like, you can really go study whatever you want now. And you don't have to be worried about being too specialized or anything, because you can really just change your path as you go. So it was, I appreciated it at the time, because I was like, I don't know what I want to study. The brain? Like, that's it.
I think, too, the other missing piece in this is that it's not just about what you study, it's about what you're doing to build up your skill set and alongside that. So I say to students, like, okay, if you're applying into this program, everybody has good grades. That's a given. Okay, where you differentiate yourself is in your activities and in the experiences that you've had and the skills that you've developed. So, you know, not to put more pressure on students, but it's not just about the grades. It's you want to make sure that you're building that skill set alongside of your academics.
And that's like huge for scholarships, I'm sure. And a lot of scholarships, I don't know, actually this, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of what I thought scholarships were weren't necessarily entirely all like what have you done up until now, but it was showing potential for what you can do in the future. So it's it's a lot about, like, I think having really good self-reflection skills, but also like being really mindful of the skills you do possess and like what you can learn going forward.
So the best predictor of future success is past success.
Sean says that to me all the time. Whenever I get really nervous that things are going to go bad, he was like, you were successful in the past, you will be successful in the future.
Exactly. And that's what they, Juliet, you were saying, like, it's potential, right? So I mean, you have to do something to show them that you have potential, and one of the best ways to do that is to have the prior, some past success.
Well, before we end off today's podcast, we have one more fun question for you. So for those of you who don't know, we all communicate via Slack, and we set our profile pictures to our pets. And so we just wanted to quickly ask you a little bit about the dogs in your profile picture.
Yeah, so it's the same dog.
Okay.
Yeah, his name is Bundles.
Oh, Bundles.
And I tell you, he is well named because he is a bundle of fun. It's a bundle of energy and it's a bundle of love.
Aww.
Yeah. So he is a dog. He's not my dog. He's a dog that I'm a part of a volunteer group called Elder Dog. And so he is the dog that I volunteer walk every week. I've been doing it for about 3 years. And because his owners are not able to walk him as much as he needs to be walked. So I pick him up every Friday. And it's great for me because I get out and get some exercise, and I get to spend some quality Bundles time, and I love it. Yeah, so that's my guy, Bundles.
And is he a pug?
He's like a pug. like Frenchy kind of, I don't know, mix of some kind. Yeah. But he's absolutely adorable. I love him.
That sounds like the best volunteer position.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. Because you really, I mean, you're helping yourself. You're out there walking. You're helping the dog and you're helping the person.
Owners,
The purpose of the program is to keep the companionship in the home with the person who needs that companionship.
Yeah.
And so Bundles is a bit of maybe a therapy dog,
yeah. Yes.
For the people who own him, but they're not able to care for him in that way. So this is a way to keep Bundles in the home with the people who own him.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's beautiful. Yeah. I wonder if they have any cat equivalent. Just kidding. I could be okay with walking dogs. Anyways, thank you so much for coming on today and telling us your role both as administration assistant, but then also describing your really incredible business. It's been so fun chatting with you today.
Yeah, thank you very much. I've had a lot of fun too. Thanks.
Up next, Out of Pocket with Olivia.
Like many other people in the world, I struggle with anxiety. This often leads me to overthink a lot of things, even the small things in my day-to-day life. And I often see many interactions as a form of confrontation, even when they aren't. Confrontation and conflict are my least favorite things, which I will avoid at all costs, including when I am a pedestrian in the city. In Nova Scotia, pedestrian crossings are everywhere, where pedestrians have the right of way. However, I'm still incredibly uncomfortable making a car stop for me, so I try to avoid the interaction altogether. So this is a shout out to people who pretend like they're not crossing the street and keep walking on the sidewalk in order to not have a car stop for them. You don't owe anyone an explanation. Now, this might be because I'm not originally from Nova Scotia, but when I do have to cross the street and make a car stop, I still try to minimize the time that I stop the car for. So shout out to people who do that little run-jog thing when they cross the street. No matter how much time they have to cross, you don't owe anyone an explanation. However, if you do need the full time for any reason, you also don't owe anyone an explanation.
Well, thank you for listening to our podcast, Mind the Gap. I am your host, Juliet.
And I am your co-host, Teresa.
And this was recorded at CKDU.